Well, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and happy whatever it is. Happy whatever you're
Earth
celebrating
Day.
Today.
Monday.
Yes, it's
Earth
it's
Day.
Earth Day. Okay. It's Easter Monday. It's if you were celebrating Easter or Passover or whatever Passover right. continues.
Yes,
correct.
Yes.
So and best yet, it's a sunny day. So there you go. Enjoy that. Good morning, everyone. Welcome. We have a lot to talk about. We have a great panel. So let me introduce everybody and we'll get started. We have a busy news day as well. Libby Post is to my left, and shouldn't she always be? Libby Post is a political consultant. Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm fine. Good
oh,
to
good.
Have you here.
Lovely to be here.
Well, look who the cat dragged in. Malcolm Nance is here, MSNBC commentator, best-selling author, our good friend. Hello.
You never say New York Times best-selling author.
Because you are a best-selling author on many other lists.
Amazon,
and not
USA
just
Today.
Know the New York Times. So that would be exclusionary, I thought.
Yeah, but you know, that's something my mom would once said.
Okay.
Noted.
All right. Hey, look. New York Times best-selling author Malcolm Nance is
hey.
In the house.
Howdy, y'all.
How are you? Good to have you here. Nice to have you back in the program. Barry Lewis is here. Barry is our good friend and executive editor of the Times Herald Record. Good morning, Barry.
Good morning, Joe. How you doing?
I'm fine. Nice to have you here.
Nice to be here.
Sarah Rogerson directs the Immigration Law Clinic as an Albany Law School professor. Good morning.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you with us. And Alan Shartok. Hello. How are you?
I've been a very long time.
You know, yeah.
I crawled out at 2 this morning and I said, I might as well go to work. So I came over.
Well, you don't have to. You could have gone back to bed.
What'd you say?
You could have gone back to bed. Right?
No.
No?
No, that's not the way it works.
All right. Well, we're delighted that you're
but
here.
But I did want to remind everybody, upcoming is
oh my
the
God.
Pete Seeger
Do that.
Concert, Happy Traum. It's going to be great. I'm going to be there. On May 3rd at 7 p.m., $100 per ticket, goes into the lockbox, the end.
WAMC.org if you want to do it online. If you'd like to give us a call, operators are standing by.
Lewis Aluminum.
There you go. 1-800-323-9262, and we are ready to go.
We are.
Let's tackle the news. So we will begin with Sri Lanka and the tragedy that happened yesterday that obviously details are still coming in on. Regarding what happened in Sri Lanka, we know that. It's hard. This one's hard because the bomb attacks targeting and killed hundreds, not millions, as perhaps
as
reported by the
yes.
president report. But okay.
Well, his initial report. Then he changed it.
The clock hands on the steeple of St. Anthony's Shrine were stuck at 8:45, the exact moment when the first suicide bomber's explosion ripped through the wooden pews as Easter Sunday worshipers were mourning. Just moments later, a second suicide blast shattered a Sunday brunch tranquility at the Shangri-La Hotel's Table One restaurant, a favorite of foreign tourists. And then within a few hours, suicide bombings hit 3 Catholic churches and 3 upscale hotels in the Indian Ocean island nation of Sri Lanka, still recovering from a quarter-century civil war in which the suicide bomb was pioneered. The death toll in the attacks rose to 290, about 500 people wounded, a police spokesman said, although he would not give a breakdown of where the fatalities occurred. The finance minister called the attacks a well-coordinated attempt to create murder, mayhem, and anarchy. By day's end, the police said at least 13 people had been arrested in connection with the attacks in the capital. 7 of them were seized at a hideout after one suspect blew himself up, killing 3 officers. So let us go to our counterterrorism expert, Malcolm Nance, and talk about what happened yesterday, what we know, and who ultimately, there was no immediate claim of responsibility. But police said that they believe the bombings were the work of one group, but I declined to identify it.
Yeah. The name of the group that they suspect is involved here is a Sri Lankan-based Muslim extremist group called Tawhid Jamaat. That means Tawhid means the unity of the one God, right? And Jamaat is group or alliance. This group is an example of of what happens when you stamp out an organization like ISIS.
Yep.
And I've said this many times. I've written an entire book about it. called Defeating ISIS, that they are a ball of mercury. And when you stomp on a ball of mercury, it breaks up and it spreads out into hundreds of little microparticles, which have to be mopped up. And what you're seeing is an increased radicalization because they've lost their core headquarters. They have pushed out to their fringe arms. And in the Indian Ocean area, we've seen this in the Maldives. In India, they have a big following in Tamil Nadu, which is the southeastern state of India. And, of course, there is a history of very violent terrorism in Sri Lanka. As you said, they fought a civil war with the Tamils in the northeastern part of the country, where hundreds of examples of suicide bomb techniques were developed. I actually wrote yet another book on that. So it's just utterly amazing. But at the same time, it is an extremely soft target. It's a country which didn't have, you know, has been recovering from the civil war and the tsunami, which killed tens of thousands of people in that place, including a naval base that I worked at down in Galle in the southern part of Sri Lanka, literally eliminated, scoured it away. It just didn't exist anymore. So they've been going through a lot of hardship. And in this case, now they find homegrown terrorism with an external philosophical bent has attacked all of their basic institutions.
So let's talk about the philosophical bent and this rising trend of religious-based violence in that region.
Well, it's always been there, right, to a certain extent. And now what you're looking at, again, we've stomped on that giant ball of mercury instead of mopping it up in tiny little pieces, and its more extremist elements have been self-empowered to arm themselves and carry out the philosophy of armed extremist jihad against all comers in each one of their own nations. It's an extension of Osama bin Laden's original plan of fighting in your home country, right, the near enemy. And when ISIS did it, when ISIS brought it all together, they were creating an Islamic homeland in one place. But they also said you still need to go out and create your own, you know, jihad zone in your own country. And now we're seeing these in India and in Pakistan and other places, it really coming to fruition. We thought we had ISIS in Afghanistan, for example, defeated 2 years ago. The Taliban were helping us.
So, Malcolm, when you have a religious extremist that now really doesn't have a central base but can be all over, and they're doing this first hit in a place like Sri Lanka, there's a message that I assume that they are sending out to the rest of the world.
Sure. It's the same message that was sent out on 9/11 against us, which is we are a force, we are a power. You know, there is no real centralized base. And ironically, when I wrote the book Defeating ISIS, Donald Trump said it was the last book he had ever read. The purpose of their ideology is the spread of their ideology. They are not centered anywhere but in the hearts and minds of anyone who wishes to adopt it. Here in the United States, all these kids and people we were arresting who were claiming they were going to do things in the name of ISIS, all you have to do is watch a video or read about it or just be enamored by the thought, and you could become a foot soldier in a global war that has no borders or boundaries.
And white nationalism is using the same playbook.
Mm-hmm. Absolute same playbook. Absolute
same playbook. Armed militants on the southern border just deciding to detain asylum seekers who, ironically, are the same people who are fleeing places like, well, years ago, Sri Lanka. I represented individuals who were targeted by, I think it was the Tamil Tigers.
Tamil Tigers. Ooh, awful terrorist group.
Awful. Same in Maldives, people fleeing political persecution, just cycles upon cycles of political persecution in that country. So those are the people that are fleeing through our southern border, and it's the white nationalist extremists who are taking out the playbook of these terrorists to further their ideology, which is also centered on one nation, I guess, as
right.
opposed to
white
one
national
God.
Extremism is now moving away from its let's just be a radical philosophy and hate and be hating on people into self-starting terrorists. Anders Behring Breivik, I went to Norway last year and went to the massacre site at Utøya Island, where he massacred 69 children under the age of 18 in order to eliminate, as he put it, quote unquote, the next generation of liberal leadership in Norway. These people who call themselves, who are we call incels, involuntary celibates, who are these violent, vicious misogynists, mm-hmm. who just hate women, but celebrate the fact that their murderers go around and do it, and then they replicate, like the Columbine shooters, they replicate the previous murderer and honor that person. So, we saw that in New Zealand.
So, Sarah and Malcolm, the question I've had here is, what's the end game? They don't really think people are going to, you know, kowtow to them and say, you know, come on and run our country.
No, they don't. But what they you know, it's the same story behind all terrorism. Terrorism is not about that 292 victims in that in those church and the hotels and everything. It's not about them. All right. The definition of terrorism, right, is an act of terror in order to impact an audience beyond the immediate victims. Yeah. They intend to have sent, this was, you know, terror, you know, demonstration by deed. This was terror by deed. They wanted to announce they are extant in Sri Lanka. And the way they did it was seven suicide bombers, and they've, you know,
hitting churches on Easter Sunday. They knew
clearly. Of course.
I mean, they couldn't have been more impactful.
And the hotels that Westerners right. went to, one of which I'd stayed at before in Colombo. And they just wanted to announce that they're here. And we will see more of these I am here announcements in small, far fringe countries that you just won't think about until they attack.
So what does being here amount to? They're here. I get that.
And they're here to wage their war, their holy war. And to, I mean, come on, the country is overwhelmingly not Muslim. Okay, I mean, they're right. a fraction of the population. But for them, it's about waging this war behind the lines to a certain extent of where they think their enemies are. Interesting fact, when I wrote Defeating ISIS, we did this entire study of how they did combat tactics. They literally used the first battles of the Quran, of the Prophet Muhammad, and they try to replicate them. And it's really weird. They live in this weird 7th century mentality, which of course did not help them when the B-52 bombers came over Syria. But they do think that they are these foot soldiers behind the lines of enemies, and they attack their enemies with whatever they have at hand.
But they use 21st century technology to gain their recruits.
Absolutely. And in a place like Sri, yeah, of course.
That's just the scary part of this.
Social media is without a doubt the big, it created ISIS. I'm old school, all right? I started back when Red Army Faction and, you know, the Bader Meinhof gang and Action Direct and all these tiny leftist European groups were still around, and the rogue elements of the SDS and the Irish Republican Army. Those are what we call the good old bad days of terrorism. You know, that was a law enforcement problem. This is a counter ideology problem.
Right.
And they spread their ideology as social technology improves, they get better because all they have to do is sit still and their message spreads. You can't stop it.
Well, certainly a tragedy yesterday, and when we look at, so how do we as a world respond to an act like this?
Well, you know, the funny thing is that we threw enormous resources into the government of Sri Lanka to stop their, they had a real terrorist civil war going on. The Tamil Tiger terrorist group, or the Tamil Liberation Army as they called themselves, which fought in the northeastern part of Sri Lanka, I don't want to say they invented modern suicide bombing, but they perfected modern suicide bombing. The suicide bombs that we see ISIS and Al-Qaeda use, with the exception of, you know, 9/11 attacks in the airplane, which were the kamikaze of World War II, right? These guys created phenomenally inventive weapon systems. Suicide human-guided torpedoes that made the Japanese ones in World War II look like ridiculous, right? These things could move 50 knots, and they were sinking U.S.-supplied special operations high-speed boats over there. Suicide bomber men, women, children, dogs, goats were everywhere in that place. And of all the places in the world that this particular terrorist group could get sympathizers and technology to build these bombs, because they said the bombs were very sophisticated, was from the Tamil Tigers, the remnants of this group that lost their civil war.
Well, if you look at the map, I mean, Sri Lanka isn't that big, but if you look at the map, I mean, but it is, mm-hmm. it was from coast to coast, and a lot of damage done at every site.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And again, This was a demonstration attack to show you we're everywhere. And what I think an after effect of this is that, you know, the Tamils weren't religious, right? They were sort of these atheistic, sort of communist nationalists who wanted their own Tamil homeland in the Northeast. And these guys are probably relying and hoping that the Sri Lankan government and the Sri Lankan people take it out on the Tamils, you know? And, you know, maybe even drop hints or find evidence that the Tamil, ex-Tamil tigers helped them. That could reignite the civil war in the country.
Now, can the Sri Lankan government be trusted? Because there's already questions as to what they knew and how did they act and that. And now they've taken the stance that we are shutting down social media to, as they say, try to end any reports of false narratives and false reports.
Right.
But that plays both ways here. You're now shutting down the communication.
Yeah.
Are they a trusted source here?
I've been to Sri Lanka. I helped in their counterterrorism effort back when the Tamil Tigers were a threat. And they're just poor. Okay? They're just poor. They're doing whatever they can. You know, the funny thing is, when I was in Sri Lanka, the first thing I thought was, wow, this is what India in 1948 must have looked like. They just don't have the governmental infrastructure, the competence. They in the end, got the military strength to beat the Tamil Tigers. But now they're talking about the Tamil Tigers are gone, and what they did against them cannot be replicated against these guys. This is a counterintelligence, counterterrorism effort that you're probably going to see a huge global input to them. But who are they going to go after? The very small Muslim population?
So what does the United States do?
Well, if we invested more in poverty programs and international development and in the type of international development that lifts up the poor as opposed to the war economy, we'd be on better footing.
No,
so opposite of what the Trump administration is promoting to do.
Yeah, you're going to see frigates, high-speed boats, special operations deployment teams. You're not going to see any foreign support.
Same thing every day.
Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, Alan has some letters. We welcome your letters as well. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Alan Chartok is here. Libby Post, Sarah Rogerson, Barry Lewis, and Malcolm Nance. We do welcome your New York Times bestselling author, Malcolm Nance. We'll be back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and a lively panel even during the breaks. Good morning and welcome, everybody. It's nice to have you with us. We have Alan Chartok, Libby Post, Sarah Rogerson, Barry Lewis, and Malcolm Nance with us this morning. We have some letters. We're going to go with those first, and then we'll move on to many other topics and stuff. Go ahead, Alan.
John says, good morning, panel. When the Christchurch shooting occurred, the media spent a week calling for gun control, focusing on the victims, and running several stories about a rise in white supremacy. So far in this bombing, I've seen the media point out the fact that the Islamic minority in Sri Lanka has been oppressed, that the government was lacking in preparedness, and that the terror group responsible is small and insignificant. If you're wondering why people say the media is biased, here is an example, says John.
Nope. I don't quite understand what the
correlation is between the two.
Well, we're not discussing the rights of the Islamic minority. No, I think the media right now for 24 hours out of an attack is right where it should be. I think more education is necessary. But no one's saying that the Islamic minority is oppressed. They are. Okay? That's just it. But this isn't the Islamic minority doing this attack.
Right.
This is ISIS-inspired crazies using terrorism who are actually hurting their own cause in that country.
Regular writer Tom says, compare and contrast the homegrown terrorists in Sri Lanka to our own brand of domestic terrorists.
Oh, no comparison.
My ears were ringing earlier when I mentioned that.
There's no comparison?
Well, I mean,
Why isn't there no comparison?
Just only because
our folks burned down churches. Our folks randomly arrest people at the border. Our folks kill people ad nauseum without any remorse. They're all white, angry men who are their own brand of domestic terrorism. They are domestic terrorists.
Yeah.
They're the biggest threat to the United States, other than Trump.
Not debating that. It's just that qualitatively, quantitatively, and based on their history of operations in Sri Lanka, they're just an order of magnitude different to these yahoos we have here.
For now.
Next letter.
Thank you, Joe. Bob says, a question for Malcolm. Apparently, the Sri Lankan government ignored multiple warnings with lots of details about the coming attacks. How could that have happened, given worldwide recognition of the terrorism threat, unless there was complicity on the part of the intelligence agencies?
No, it's just a poor, poor country. And they barely get through, you know, feeding their population. It's a beautiful country, right? They have industry. They have people, but their biggest export are you know, maids.
Counterterrorism is expensive.
Yeah. This is,
but they had it. That's what the writer indicates, I think, got a point. Everybody was warned. They said, this is coming. They knew enough to say that.
You know, again, they don't have police forces like we have police forces. They don't have intelligence the way we have intelligence.
But they said it, Malcolm. That's what's interesting.
I know. The police there said that they had indications there would be an attack on churches. But where, when, why, and how? I mean, the terrorists have the advantage here.
Okay. And then we heard for Bob, who said, for Mr. Nance, I recently saw a meme on Facebook that listed 3 to 4 terrible things about Joe Biden. It was awful. How does the ordinary citizen distinguish between disinformation originating from a foreign power and the normal kind of lying and mudslinging that native-born political parties generate to discourage voters? And that's Bob from Round Lake.
Oh, that's a great question.
That's a good question. Now we're on to disinformation. They're going to look identical. It's a question of amplification, not just creation. The Mueller report laid out in great detail, all of the horrible things, memes, lies that the Russians were doing that looked completely and jived completely with the Trump data team, Trump supporters, Trump campaign, and other campaigns. You have to learn to identify when you see horrible, terrible conspiracy theory stuff.
And that's call out other people.
Right, and that's where Facebook got you know, hit, is that the Russian bots were basically mirroring what anybody else was doing, and Facebook not looking at where was this where were these ads being bought from, you know, where was the link financially, because visually they looked exactly the same, and it's only now that we're realizing they weren't.
Right, and thankfully our libraries are actually stepping up. I keep seeing program after program at public libraries on how to spot fake news, how to determine the difference between what's real and what's not. You know, I mean, our libraries are our last bastion of democracy in this country, and they're stepping up to the plate.
So they may not do, Louis, they may not be the last bastion of democracy.
Oh, I know. This place is. I understand that.
That's number one.
But from a nationwide perspective.
That's number one.
Lawyers
and number
are.
Number two, we always want to point out
that journalists are.
If there's any potential conflict of interest here, even if
that's
a good one, that you work for the
I work for libraries. Absolutely. And I'm proud to say it.
I love them.
Well, and if you see something, say something online and not just reporting it to Facebook or Twitter, but responding directly to the individual that posted it, maybe in person if you know them, and say, knock it off.
And don't retweet crazy. You know when you see something that's crazy, don't retweet, you know, what your nutty uncle sends.
You know, my partner Lynn is from Virginia, Southeast Virginia, and she's got some people who on Facebook who she grew up with or she's friends with, went to high school with, and she pushes back and they just push right back because they really, really believe
it's true
in the veracity of these memes. They believe in the veracity of Trump and what they're saying, and no amount of rational thought is going to change their minds.
That's fair. I mean, I think I spent the first 2 months after the election pushing back on folks in person and social media in my living room. I do think that there's something to be said for the push, even if you don't see immediate results. I've seen people coming around in the last couple of months as events unfold, as the Mueller report details are poured over in excruciating detail. Just because it doesn't seem like someone's listening to you doesn't mean it's not resonating somewhere.
I think we're also seeing that people are relying less on Facebook. People are posting less on Facebook.
Yes.
People are spending less time on Facebook. And I think that the energy and everything that we're enjoying about Facebook has been diluted, and now people are just pushing, not even so much pushing back. They're just saying, you know, I just don't need to be on here all the time. I don't want to see the same stuff. I'm concerned with the ads that are now being pushed because they obviously are looking at what I'm clicking on. And so just in general, there's less Facebook being used.
Yes, click on one ad and then the New York Times pops up with the ad, the product you just clicked on.
Yesterday I saw the leap from crazy Facebook conspiracy to a New York State vanity plate. And it was the initials from the QAnon people, where we go one, where we go all. And this guy's license plate was that initials. You have to pay $75 to get that kind of crazy on your car. But he's literally putting out the message from the crazy QAnon conspiracy theorist, which is the nuttiest conspiracy theorist since the reptile people. But it's now made that leap, and he's advertising this. It's like those old Ron Paul signs that people would make up on cardboard and put up on rural roads.
All right. So there's a bunch of stuff that's just happening right now. Trump and his business are suing to block congressional subpoena financial records. President Trump is seeking a court order to prevent his accounting firm from complying with what his lawyers say is an illegitimate use of congressional subpoena power by congressional Democrats. This just broke 6 minutes ago.
Why not try it? Yeah. You know, we have to litigate everything with this president.
The man is the master of litigation, and that's what he's done his whole career. Yeah. That's why he comes out of bankruptcy 6 times, and he's still able to, you know, profess that he's a business genius and get a loan.
He thinks he owns the judiciary.
It is Elijah Cummings
point.
Who's
that
been sued.
That is exactly the point, Malcolm.
Well, and when you have Barr doing that's what he does, he obviously, you know, he's shown that, yes, he can manipulate the judicial system.
That's right.
He has.
Sure.
And McGahn.
Trump says Democrats are singularly obsessed with finding something they can use to damage the president politically. Okay.
The Mueller report wasn't good
enough.
Last
week, Cummings subpoenaed the accounting firm used by Trump. The filing in U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia further escalates the clash between the White House and the Democratic House over congressional oversight. Can I just ask the general question of is anything going to work in actually getting these things out?
Well, work is an interesting concept. I think what you're seeing is that his numbers are going down. Mm-hmm. It goes down from the 40s into the sort
high
of
30s.
Higher 30s. Yeah. Well, 37.
Yeah, that's true.
And what's important is that it is going down. The Republicans are not deserting. All the polling is showing that.
Yeah.
But they never will.
And Alan,
it's
April of 2019, and as we've seen with his poll numbers that go down in the mid-high 30s, when there may be some action, you know, 3 months from now, it goes back up to 43, 45.
Yeah.
And that's where he's going to be at. You know, he can very well be at that.
Never.
In next October.
Well, you know, I love
November.
You know, I have been of a different thinking about the Mueller report, but it is now incredibly clear, as I said earlier today, that this is Hansel and Gretel laying out the breadcrumbs. He did a masterful job of telling the Congress where to go, you know, on all of this. So I think because of the Mueller report, it is not that likely it'll go up to 44 or 45, although this morning his tweeting is basically the stock market is doing so well, you don't have to think about anything else besides that.
That
may work.
Which has been his message from day one. Mm-hmm. As long as the economy is good and he continues with the bumper sticker messages, nothing's going to change. I mean, the New York Times did a magnificent job on Friday. They put together this special section which laid out the whole Mueller report. And journalistically, it's what you do, and I, you know, congratulate them as a journalist. It's wonderful. But the reality is, for those who are generally New York Times readers, they got it, and maybe they found some information that, oh, this is an interesting part I didn't realize. But for the Trump supporter or for most other folks, it wouldn't change one iota. It doesn't matter what was in that report or what the Times published.
Yeah, but what it does do...
And I'm not saying that they shouldn't, but that's the frustration.
But what it does do is to give, as I said, the breadcrumbs to Richie Neal and his pursuing and Nadler. I know Nadler fairly well, you know, over the years, and I can tell you this guy is really out for blood. And they're getting the stuff they need from the report. So yes, it would be better if everybody understood everything in the report, all 400 pages. They don't have to.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, let's talk about the impeachment quandary and more. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Monday morning, the 22nd of April, 48 minutes past 9 o'clock. Alan, let's do some letters and then we'll talk impeachment.
I'll give you one letter. Or
all right.
A couple, which will bring you where you want to go, I think.
Excellent. Joe.
Brucey writes, I just made my weekly call to Democratic Representative Tonko. If this president doesn't merit a vigorous investigation and impeachment process, what level of worse do we require? Silence is assent. Take the risk, says Brucey. Would I be allowed to just sort of start it off?
As you,
you know,
should.
My position is, this is ridiculous. This president is not going to go down via impeachment because the United States Senate won't do it. And we know that. Not only that, you just won. Wake up and smell the flowers, everybody. You just won the House of Representatives with the message that's out there. You're going to win the Senate if you just don't deviate. If you vote to impeach him, and you could do it. You could vote in the House and you can get an impeachment resolution. The Senate will either not take it up or if they do take it up, they will say no because they are scared of their primaries. We all know that. But you still want to do it. You can win it all or you can mess up because you want to scratch the itch. That's my view.
I think the Pelosi playbook is going to mirror what they did in 2018, which is, okay, we're going to let some committees hold some hearings, but we're going to bring up an infrastructure bill. We're going to bring up a health care bill. We're going to bring up these bills, and we're going to show that we're still doing the people's work. And if the Senate Republicans do not want to touch it, that's fine. But she's going to keep it going. Let some committees do their job and let more reports come out there.
Well, the emphasis should be on it's a matter of emphasis, Barry. I honestly think that the emphasis here has to be on go for it. Investigate the hell out of this guy. Bring every single thing up to the American people that they need to know.
Agreed.
But do not vote an impeachment resolution which can't go anywhere and which will stop everything dead cold.
But you also can't spend 24 months having the American public think that's all you've been doing.
That's right.
You can't do that.
We have to talk about issues. We won in 2018 on the issues.
You're not going to, right, because if the issue is Donald Trump, you're not going to win.
So let me just read this one paragraph from the New York Times article on this impeachment quandary. For now, according to interviews with multiple Democratic campaign officials, most of the candidates feel no pressure to demand Mr. Trump's impeachment because they simply do not hear a mass clamoring for it on the campaign trail. And in their polling, impeachment is not a top priority for the party's voters, who say they are more motivated by defeating Mr. Trump in 2020 and seeing their desired policy agenda put in place.
You know, okay, I'm with you. You guys have all convinced me.
It's that easy, huh?
Last week, Donnie Deutsch on MSNBC said the exact same thing. He said, you got to dual track this thing. Investigate the heck out of him. Right. Keep the pressure on him. Be prepared, though, that he is going to use all the power of the office of the presidency to damage this country as much as he possibly can. Pack the courts and all that. But at some point, you're going to have to punish him. And I recommend censure. Which is not impeachment.
Good.
They could just do it tomorrow, a letter of censure to say the president of the United States, and that it is just one step below impeachment, right? But you can do a censure on him.
Well,
he
no,
cannot
it's
be
not
a,
one step below.
Well, you know, I mean,
one step below impeachment doesn't get you him out of there. You see?
Right. I understand that. I'm just complying
okay.
that.
Well, okay, but if that's what goals. Will satisfy some of the bloodlust in blood so lust. Many people, I'm all for
but
it.
But as you said, until more than one Republican, and the only one we've seen so far who even made some sort of a tepid move was Mitt Romney. And until you have a mass group of respected Republicans who will say, you know, this is where the line is, that whole idea of any kind of level of impeachment stuff is just not there.
I think even Mitt Romney has learned really quickly.
Yeah, because once he said it, everybody else left them out in the dust. And
that's right. that even though he did the right thing, it's courageous to do, the message is clear from the Republicans, you better shut up.
Can you have it both ways? So Pete Buttigieg in Londonderry, New Hampshire yesterday said, I'm pretty sure he deserves to be impeached, but doesn't think it should necessarily be done, and said Congress will have to figure procedurally what to do.
God, but see, that's where the bloodlust comes from. Because when you talk like that out of both sides of your mouth, what you get is you essentially say, I don't believe that anything can be done to stop this man, and he can do whatever he wants. Because he has done whatever he wants. Any other president, this impeachment would have happened a year and a half ago. A Democrat.
Yeah, if you're the candidates, you let Nadler do his job, and you're out in Missouri and you're out in Michigan, and you're talking about jobs and health care.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
You let Nadler do their jobs. Yeah. You don't have to. If you're Mayor Pete and you're in Indianapolis, you're talking about the issues that are affecting the people in Indianapolis today.
And I wonder if it's the tax bill that had more to do with the decline in approval rating for the president than the Mueller report. I think you have to find areas that the base cares about. And you're talking taxes, which was one of his highest approval ratings, was after they passed comprehensive tax reform.
And then they had to do their taxes.
Exactly.
Yeah, people spent more money in the federal, paying into the federal government. Instead of getting the rebates, getting some money back, they put money in.
And yet the president is still crowing about that.
But you're seeing
is interesting.
Well, he does it, but that doesn't. I mean, reality to him
it's the big lie.
Right.
But you're also seeing people now this last week have got tangible evidence that he's a crook, that he's dirty, that he did things which violated the law. And now some people are going to get the impression this is carte blanche to get away with it now. You can do whatever you want if you're a Republican
but
president.
But we had that big check, the cover-up for Stormy Daniels. Mm-hmm. It was huge, blown up in the House. Right.
That news cycle lasted 24 hours.
Yes.
24 hours.
Cardboard size.
And they keep saying it's a procedural crime. It's an election crime. They're not real crimes. Hey, these are real crimes. All right?
Yeah, but if that was the case, then the Mueller report would have simply said this is a crime, and it didn't, and they're going to hold their hat on this thing. That's the frustration.
And they would have referred it to the appropriate
Mueller
DA.
Went the constitutional route and said, now go do your constitutional duty. Here's all the evidence.
No, it was brilliant.
Except
Democrats
he's got a constitution,
won't do it.
Right. Oh, no, they'll do it.
No, the Republicans aren't touching this.
No, they're not, and they
forget
won't. They won't. It's going to
be
up to
the You can't forget about
the
Republicans because they're running the Senate.
Well, it's law enforcement agencies that really have to pick up the ball and run with it, too. If they have probable cause to investigate something, that's their constitutional duty.
Well, given how he's undermined the FBI, the CIA, just publicly from his statements, I wouldn't doubt that they'd pick up some of this stuff and go after him. And let's not forget the Southern District of New York and all the other areas where there are cases against this president that are not on the federal level but are on a more local level. The AGs are doing stuff. But what's more, what factors into all of this, there was a new poll that just came out from Emerson, that said that Bernie Sanders folks, at least 20% of them, they'll vote for Trump if Buttigieg or Warren win the nomination.
And that's the lesson I call it the Susan Sarandon syndrome.
Right. Oh, yeah.
That Bernie didn't get it, Hillary did, so we're not going to vote for Hillary. And I'm looking at Susan Sarandon saying...
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, and I'm looking at Susan Sarandon saying, okay, how did this play out?
Yeah, yeah. How's this
working out for you?
Well, if you recall, the Jill Stein platform was, let him destroy the country and we'll pick up the pieces.
Yeah. That's also working out well, right?
Right.
I mean, head in the sand.
Traditional heavy lefty.
Right, and she also
left
supported by the Russians.
It's so as if they come around to the alt-right.
Yeah.
She sat right at the table with Putin. She got a lot of their support. My problem with this is because I'm from Philadelphia, strict constitutionalist. They gave you the procedure to do what needs to be done when you find that a president has carried out high crimes and misdemeanors. And there's high crimes and misdemeanors over 668 pages here. I know it's political. I know it's not convenient. But you know what? Trials are never convenient.
You have to convince the dermatologist, and the dermatologist says, if you scratch that itch, you're going to make it worse. And you're making it worse.
Well,
that's a very visceral metaphor.
What's more important?
Believe your dermatologist.
Yeah, but what's more important?
And that really
is
the message here.
Having the short-term, you know, oh, yeah, I finally got him, and we're going to get a vote and impeach him, or getting him out of office. To me, getting him out of office is the most important thing. And trying to go for the impeachment right now will just rile up his base. And it'll
his base
and we won't.
Is 44.
Not to mention the fact that, look, if you impeach the guy, and even if you got him out of office, and so now you have President Pence. And so the answer isn't getting Trump out of office that way and having Pence in. If you're a Democrat, the idea is, or you believe that Trump did wrong, you vote him out of office.
Okay.
And you vote President Pence out of office.
And if a Democrat is elected president and there's charges brought up against Trump.
what a nice slip.
Yeah. Tell me about your mother.
Right. There's not going to be a pardon. There's not going to be a pardon like Jerry Ford pardon Nixon.
If
there
we're
will not
sitting
be a
here and there is a second term of Donald Trump and we all come back here in the roundtable, what I don't want to hear is, man, I guess we should have impeached him.
But we
you
can't.
Didn't have the ability to impeach him. What is
just,
the matter with you?
I'm not saying.
The Senate's not going to do it. It's just not going to do it.
I understand.
There are no Howard Bakers left in this world.
I see
you've got a little rash on your arm.
That's not an itch.
You know what? We don't even have a Barry Goldwater left.
We don't.
All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Well, this is entertaining. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Sarah Rogerson, Barry Lewis, Malcolm Nance, Libby Roast. I almost said Libby Roast. Let's roast Libby.
No, that's been done, and it was a lot of fun.
I bet. We raised a lot of money for good causes.
Yeah.
Alan has letters, and we'll do those, and then we'll move on to the stuff.
I'll read the best letter. It's from our friend Eric, who says, "Hi, panel. Alan's right. See, get the anti-itch medication and wait for the election, reasonably." That's Eric. And then we heard from Brucey again. That's two, I think. I don't know what you're
Brucey.
Right. I just made my weekly call to Democratic Representative Tocco.
You did that one already.
We did that. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
I missed that one.
Okay.
That's all right.
Good morning, panel. Mr. Nance, in reply and rebuttal to Libby Post, you said their terrorists are an order of magnitude different from our terrorists here in America, the white nationalists. Is that true when you also factor in the generations of Ku Klux Klan and white terrorism on black communities and police violence and brutality in this country? And thank you, from Otha.
It's a good question. I just think it's a very different tactical set and what methodologies they use. The Ku Klux Klan was organizationally integrated into the life of the white United States during its historical period.
Whites were in charge.
Yeah, it was easy to do from the beginning. But terrorism
right.
is terrorism, right? It's right. intended to terrorize a population right. in order to gain concessions or to inspire fear for a political purpose. And in that sense, all terrorism is the same.
Good morning, Malcolm. What's the difference between a young man from the U.S. who joined the military after September 11, 2001, and a young man from insert country who joins ISIS or the terrorist, in quotes, organizations after an attack on the country? I see no difference. Both are willing to join a group that trains them to kill, jail, torture other human beings, and decimate infrastructure.
You're wrong. One is an armed force that's duly authorized governments acting within the rules of law, and the other is a terrorist.
Okay, that was from Jade. And here we go from
We can say that there are also institutions that are set up to identify when legitimate militaries overstep their boundaries, and that the only reason why we know about some of the incidents at Guantanamo and other places is because those institutions did their job. So it's a false equivalency.
Dear panel, says Joanna from Rensselaerville, I spent my entire Easter Sunday reading the Mueller report, and I learned that seminars on how to distinguish Russian-based lies from other false messages won't help. Russian-originated postings were brilliantly crafted for duplicity and ubiquitous. What are we doing to prepare for 2020? Joanna. Right.
Everyone should self-educate. I think I just saw a poll flash up that said, you know, there's over 50% of the American population has is exhibiting extreme interest in the 2020 elections.
That's great. That's
so,
really good.
So if you're paying attention, pay attention to the right stuff.
And but we can't forget about what happened in 2018, the blue wave, the rainbow wave. That's going to continue. It's just that simple.
Well, we also have to figure in all the eccentricities of our political system. So we saw what the Electoral College could mean. We have to figure on that.
Yeah.
And by the way, whoever's running for president on the Democratic side better damn well figure on that also, who didn't do it the last time.
That's right.
We can't ignore those states, and that's what killed them. 70,000 votes.
Can't ignore Wisconsin.
I
Michigan,
think we should also have, in addition to a margin of error for polling, some sort of polling mechanism to identify like a percentage of collusion or a percentage of interference, right? We still rely on polls to tell us information about what the American public is thinking. But that information is inherently manipulated still to this day by foreign powers, right? So there has to be a way, statistically, if we can find a way to make math relevant again in 2020,
to capture
the extent to which our electoral process is being manipulated by external forces, so that we can temper some of these polls. If we had that, we would have known that Hillary Clinton was a lot closer to losing than we thought she was.
Mm-hmm. And what would that have changed? Would that have changed how Hillary was going to handle things?
It may have changed some of the Bernie supporters' minds who were opting out, the Susan Sarandons, the people who thought, well, I can conscientiously object because I'm not going to be stuck with Trump because that's ridiculous because he's not polling well.
But didn't we also find out from the Trump polls that there were a lot of people who just were embarrassed and did not want to say they were for Trump, but then when they went into the polling booth, they went for Trump. There wasn't some of that that was going on as well.
What you don't tell your mother, in other words.
Yeah.
So we need to, maybe we need the mathematicians and the psychologists to get together to help us make our polls more relevant in terms of how they influence people's decision making on the morning of the election.
Sarah, I'm fascinated by what you're saying, but I'm maybe a little too dumb because I can't really figure out what that mechanism would look like.
I can't either because I'm not a mathematician. But I would say that the impact, too, just to go back to Barry's question, I was going to volunteer for Hillary in Ohio on the ground for GOTV on Election Day because we all know that elections are won and lost on Election Day. It doesn't matter what happens up until then. And ground game is one of the most important things in an election. And I opted out and nobody begged me to come. You know, not like they do that, but they weren't focused on the ground game because they thought they had it in the bag.
Well, they also, Robbie Mook, you know, really focused on a computer-generated model that he was using. And Bill kept saying, you need to go to Wisconsin, you need to go to Michigan, something's not right here, because Mook just ignored the reality of the people and paid attention to the model.
And so maybe the lasting image and message of this should be just don't rely on polls and some level of a common sense, and just do what you know that you need to do.
You need a ground game. Who knows what when. I'm quite convinced, by the way, that while we say that nobody really thought it wasn't in the bag for Hillary, there were many people at the top of the Democratic establishment who knew it. You saw it. Just when you see how aggressive both Barack Obama and the rest of those folks were, they went out and they really put everything on the table because they were scared.
And Trump was shocked that he won. Let's not forget that.
He was
totally in shock that he actually won. They weren't banking on it. They were banking on using this platform that he had created to increase his business.
One last thing. Wouldn't it be something if social media organizations who do have this information, who do have ways to identify how much interference is coming into their platform. What if they were required to disclose, just like McDonald's has to disclose a calorie count? If you're going to eat a Big Mac, you have to know how much it counts for. If social media firms were required to disclose on particular issues how many messages were coming from outside of the United States.
Okay, so your homework, Sarah, if I can be so bold, is to figure this out and come back with a plan.
Sure. I'm all over it. You know, for the low, low price of $500,000.
The thing is this, is that I agree with you on some kind of disclosure, but it is now a little more difficult to place political ads on social media than it was in the 2016 election.
Right.
I'm authorized to place political ads, and I had to go jump through hoops in order to get that authorization done, which is fine. You know, I mean, I do it for local elections, and that's fine. But it's good that they're making people jump through hoops in order to get authorized. If you're not authorized, you cannot place a political ad. The issue is, what's the fine line between talking about an issue, which is what the Russians will do, and saying vote? Yeah.
Right.
Okay. We heard from Josh, who said, can you just go over who really is Trump's base? Which age groups and or regions of the U.S.? Well, I think they're two different questions, right? I mean,
they're all over the place, right? I mean, we would be ignorant to suggest it's Midwest or it's this. Hmm. We live in the Hudson Valley, where it can be as purple as can be, where Nan Hayworth can win, and a gay senator can win. It doesn't matter. Trump supporters are everywhere.
They are,
and of all age groups too. And I think I think we do find a lot of young folks. You look at those rallies, and there are a lot of young folks, a lot of women, a lot of Hispanics wearing those MAGA hats.
They're mostly white, though.
And Bruce says, one big problem for Democrats, if they manage to get rid of Trump, is that they would be left with Pence, which would be a big problem in 2020. Without the polarizing figure of Trump to motivate voter turnout, more Democratic voters would stay home, which is already a problem. That's Bruce from Williamsburg, and he couldn't be righter.
I think Pence is plenty polarizing on his own. It's fascinating watching him spar with Pete Buttigieg.
The evangelical youth that are at evangelical colleges are pushing back about having him come to give commencement speeches, which shows the changing demographic within the evangelical community.
Well, sometime we'll spend an hour or two on Pence. But I do think that I hear too many people saying, okay, get rid of Trump and we can live with Pence.
Yeah,
I'm hearing it, whatever it's worth. And Jamie says, keep it simple. Have House oversight hold hearings to establish all times Trump has financially profited from his being president. Send only that to the Senate for trial. Considering the constitutional restrictions is a yes or no question, the Republicans will have a hard time avoiding. Nonsense. The Republicans will have no hard time doing it because the only thing they care about is their own continuance in office.
Right.
End of discussion.
You know,
tax cut and judges. That is what is influencing them.
Ed says, Malcolm's the greatest. Come more often. That's right. Regarding impeachment, suppose you do the, quote, politic thing and don't attempt to impeach now. But then Trump somehow still wins in 2020. That's right. How would we all feel then? I'm sorry. I'm so frustrated by this argument. I don't get it. If we try, let me do it one more time. If we try to impeach him, I'm going slowly now. If we try to impeach him, the Senate will vote no. So how does this letter make sense? And we don't attempt to impeach now. The attempt isn't what's important. Are you going to make it? You're not.
That's right.
Please. Malcolm's right. Do the right thing now. Let the chips fall where they may. Despite the Clinton precedent, that's precedent, but not president. There's no guarantee that Trump's popularity would rise due to impeachment procedures, and that's Ed from Delmo.
As a political consultant, I'd rather play it safe and do the right thing so we can get him and Pence out of office.
I mean, it mirrors what Republicans are trying to do with health care, right? You had Mitch McConnell saying, "We're gonna vote. Once we get all the votes in, then we'll be able to come up with a health care plan." So what happened? They had a health care vote. It went down, and we saw the end result was
Senator McCain.
Yeah.
Right.
And not only that, Barry, since McConnell, in my opinion, is one of the three worst people in the world, there is the same thing that happened before. His people don't want to be put in that position, and he won't bring anything up for a vote that harms them.
Right. I mean, we saw locally, and you know, we brought it up before in the past. Yeah, John Faso. You know, this guy lost his race, I think, because he wore a scarlet letter that said, "I voted against healthcare."
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the other issue for him was if he had disavowed that ad, the really racist ad about Delgado.
I think that would have made a difference. But I think that vote stuck with him.
And the ad of the woman.
And then the ad with the woman.
And he could not shake that.
No. I think Delgado was a good candidate, but it was less about Delgado and more about what Fassel voted.
To lose, yeah. And he did.
And back to the letters to the panel. Below Trump, is there a single person more dangerous to the Constitution than Mitch McConnell? I swear I had not read this before. I would like to hear Malcolm comment on the report of Ola Deripaska's plan to build an aluminum plant in Kentucky. Is this out in the open quid pro quo for McConnell's help to ensure the lifting of sanctions?
Well, you know, it's out in the open, that's for sure. They raised sanctions specifically on him. And now he's building a $200 million aluminum plant in Mitch McConnell's district in Kentucky. We'll see how it goes. But, you know, these things are all conspiracy theories to people that don't agree with them.
And Johanna writes, and I believe that the quotation comes from me, I have to own up to that, about the bloodlust on the part of the people who want to see this impeachment.
Okay.
And I would just put a little preface on that. Unthinking bloodlust. Okay. Please note that despite... it's not from Joanne. I'm so sorry. It's from Barbara. So sorry. I think it's important to clarify what many of us feel is not bloodlust, which implies unthinking violence. It is rather anger caused by the pain of seeing the ideals trashed of the country that we all love. It's a wish to see the Constitution enforced, that the Senate will not impeach is what needs to go into the historical record. Let it be shown by evidence uncovered that he is guilty, and then let them refuse to take action. They will dig their own historical grave. Now, I think that's exactly what they are doing. I do believe, look, first of all, let me get my position clear. I think he ought to be impeached. But I don't think you can right now. The main thing is to protect the country by getting him out of there, and the name of the game is 2020.
That's right.
If you can do that, I don't want to take a lot of credit, but when other people were saying you can't say the word lie on the radio, I was saying the word lying on the radio. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were there first. And an awful lot of people recognized it because our fund drives went from a week or two to a day. I'll never forget it because people really understood this was a place that they could come to hear truth.
Right. And there's more and more grassroots efforts that are still continuing where we're raising money, we're supporting local candidates, supporting statewide candidates that are carrying a progressive agenda. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing it over and over and over again. And we just have to keep... The real prize here is taking back the White House, and we need to keep our eye on that prize.
And progressive religious groups, too.
That's right.
I attend a church in Saratoga, Presbyterian New England. It was packed, not just for Easter. It's packed like that every Sunday because people want to see Christianity through a lens that's not tainted by all this garbage.
And that's one of the things that Pete Buttigieg is giving voice to. Which is, it's nice to see a Democrat standing up that way.
As candidates can talk about the issues and the House can impeach, from Roscoe. As Charles Blow beautifully sounded in the New York Times this morning, the Senate has never once voted to convict. Impeachment is, quote, the strongest rebuke America is willing to give to a president. For a long time, I thought Allen's argument against impeachment for a long time, I bought Allen's argument against impeachment. No longer, once a president is impeached, he is forever marked as a chastisement into itself. It's time for some spine. Come on.
He's going to go down as the worst president in history, impeachment or no impeachment.
Bill Clinton was impeached. Right. And, you know, that doesn't come up in a lot of conversations when you talk about Bill Clinton. They despise Hillary Clinton more than they do Bill Clinton. And Bill Clinton was impeached. I mean, you know, it doesn't. It depends on what you do. After, and you know, he was still popular after the impeachment. He was even more popular after the impeachment.
Roscoe,
Newt Gingrich found that out.
Roscoe, call me up. I'll talk to you about this. Okay.
I'm sorry, Alan.
That's okay.
Private side conversations.
All right. Well, I've already made my points. And Nancy says, don't impeach now. It would help Trump win in 2020. Democrats need to work at winning the Senate and presidency in 2020 while investigating Trump and putting forth legislation. If Trump is reelected, be prepared to impeach then. If he is defeated, indictment should follow. Thanks. And that's from Nancy.
Yeah, but impeachment following reelection seems like sour grapes. And I don't know if there's a statute of limitations on impeachment.
You can't impeach a non-sitting president. Right. I mean, it's all about the person in the White House. What can happen is he can be brought up on charges because he will be a citizen.
A point, by the way, that I believe Mueller made in his report. Okay.
And you better cling to that presidency.
And Joe happen. From Ankrum, great town, Ankrum. The Trump administration has buried over 1,400 reports warning of extinctions and severe environmental threats. What makes anyone think they're not also manipulating economic reports in the same way? Oh, and why is the financial support of corporations good government and financial assistance to citizens socialism? Are we all locked in a Kafka novel?
Yes.
You know, we're all the butterfly.
I've been talking about Kafka for a long time. I've been talking about Kafka for a long, long time, and I have to say, everybody who goes to Prague, right?
Yes.
Everyone who goes sends me a picture of Kafka's house with them standing in front of it. So I must have 100 of them by now.
We are out of time. So my apologies. Thanks, everybody. Alan and Sarah and Barry and Malcolm, thank you for being here. And Libby,
You're
thank
welcome.
You. We'll see you tomorrow.
Yep.
We'll be back after this short break.